Hello and welcome to Circling the Cup, San Jose Sharks podcast, episode number 99, also known as the Gretzky cast, but really known as the summer cast.
Double cane cast, come on.
Double cane cast is good. This is a very special off-season summer edition. I'm Alex, as you've heard. Ben is here with us. What's up, Ben?
What? No, I'm not.
And in hot Sweden is Colin. How's it going, Colin?
It's hot for Sweden.
Now,
I'm hot for Sweden.
I know what you're probably thinking. I thought you guys said you weren't going to do podcasts in the summer. Why are you doing one? We didn't get John Tavares.
I don't recall saying that at all, by the way.
And of course, there's no hockey in the summer. Now, you would be correct about two of those things, but incorrect about there not being hockey in the summer. In fact, for those of you who just started watching the sport and somehow found our podcast, let us tell you that the summer, in a lot of ways, can be the most fun for hockey fans because that's when most of the transactions are going on. You can come back from the summer with a new coach, a new GM, a completely new roster. And for some people, it's a moment of hope. For other people, it's, oh, God, please, how am I going to have to survive this next year? Also known as, I don't know, the Islanders or Blackhawks this time around. We'll get through most of those. The Sharks roster, as of right now, is not too dissimilar from what it was when we left off. So you might be thinking there's not a lot to talk about, but there is. And let's start with the first thing that the Sharks did this offseason, and that would be they signed Evander Kane to a 7-year, $49 million contract extension. Now, we didn't get to see Kane and Jumbo together. We didn't even get to see a lot of Kane, to be honest. And towards the end, we got to see him injured. Now, his presence arriving from the trade deadline was a positive. I think we would all agree. What do you guys think about this contract? And are you happy to have him back? Let me just say first off, I am, but go ahead.
I'll be quick because I like Kane. I feel like he's, you know, a good Klo that we really haven't had and it's weird because we're sort of building a team of, like, you know, scrappy skill players. But I think Kane is, and my daughter agrees, Kane signing's good. I think he's good for the team. I think he's a good player. I think he's got some growing pains to do in the league because he's basically only seen a dark corner of regular season with no real challenges to step up to. So now he's got to show what he can do in the playoffs, and he needs to show that he can keep his head together. Yeah. And I think we're a good team for somebody to learn that stuff, and I think we're going to be liking Kane for a good few years.
Yeah, this is definitely a good location for a fresh start for him. And I think a lot of the fans really embraced him in coming in. And, you know, he's aware. And he made that very clear throughout sort of the end of the season and the offseason. We'll talk about one of those ways a little bit later in this podcast. I think the big question that a lot of Sharks fans maybe have in their mind, and I know you're going to touch on this, Ben,
you know,
is that contract.
Yeah, I'm torn by the signing because I was on the record before the signing not being a huge Kane fan for various reasons. You know, it's not entirely him. It's also the makeup of the team and how many knuckleheads you can afford to carry and still be able to get past their knuckleheaded ways. I like Kane. I like that he wanted to stay with the Sharks, and I'm okay even with the number per year. My primary concern, you know, Kane's 26, he's going to turn 27 during the next year, and that's fine. I mean, $7 million a year is what he probably deserves for what he brings to the table. And what he potentially could bring to the Sharks over the next 3 years. But my main issue is the term. I wish this was a shorter contract. I'd even have been willing to throw him a couple or another $1 million a year for a shorter contract because Kane plays a style of game that doesn't weather time well, right? My main concern is he's already been a little injury prone with the Sharks even. and it's kind of been a thing for his career. And will he stand up to the grind? Will he bring, you know, be able to deliver the value that we're asking of him, and not just, you know, at 27 or 28 or 29, but, you know, the style of player Kane is breaks down fast, right? It's not the kind of, he's not going to be the player who blossoms late like Pavelski did, right? A little bit more wiry, less physical guy. So I'm fine with this contract for the near future. I would have been even more fine if Tavares' watch had turned out in our favor, because this is the kind of signing that is going to be probably good for 3 years and then not as good when we get into 2021 and beyond.
Yeah, maybe. And I think a lot of us fans feel like while this signing was a positive, this signing alone, this piece is like, Evander Kane is a valuable piece to the puzzle, but it is not the end all piece to, you know, necessarily get to a cup, barring people stepping up or someone else coming in from the Oregon, the Sharks bringing someone in. And I think the other thing we're witnessing, Ben, just to kind of touch on the term, is the Sharks have just extended a lot of people to those long-term deals, right? We had Burns during the season. We had Vlasic during the season. We'll talk about Couture.
And Hurdle.
And Hurdle, So,
well, that's interesting too, right? The nuance you're talking about here, Alex, is that, you know, what is good about this signing is it ultimately for a first-round pick and a fourth and a guy that was never going to get DeBoer's attention, we ended up with a top three forward.
Yeah.
And that's great because the Sharks absolutely desperately needed another scoring guy in the mid-20s.
Right.
And it didn't, I mean, single first rounder, you know, the chance that the Sharks are going to develop a guy that they're going to get it 20, 21, 22, 23 into an immediate impact guy is nil. So for that, you get a guy who slots into the lineup, is going to complement whoever's going to be his center. And that's great for the short term. That's the thing, right? This is a great short term move.
Absolutely.
Not as great probably for the Sharks in 3 or 4 years. Maybe not. Maybe it's fine. Maybe he doesn't wear down. Maybe he becomes maybe less of a grindy player and more of a skill player with the Sharks. And we're enjoying watching Kane for the full 6 or 7 years of the contract. But you know, as you say, this was hope. I think many Sharks fans hope this was step one of a two-step bring in guys from outside improvement process.
Mainly
Tavares.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say you were talking about our new goaltender that we brought in June from, I think, what, Finland? Yeah.
Goaltender?
Yeah. Did we not? We did.
Man,
but I can't pronounce his name, so I'm not even going to pretend. This is these are the things you people miss in the off season when you don't pay attention.
Are you talking about
Swimmel
is a center, not a goalie.
Oh, I haven't listed as a goalie for some strange reason. Either way, there you go. We didn't get John Tavares. I don't think Swimmel is a center anyway.
You're talking about Antti Suomela, right? Yeah, he's a 24-year-old center.
Yeah. So.
Oh boy.
This pickup, by the way, and I know now it seems illogical that I wouldn't even talk about him, but now that you've jogged my memory, Ben, because it has been quite the offseason, this is a pretty decent pickup, right? This kid was playing lights out in his league and kind of on a Donskoy pace.
Yeah, I mean, my thing with Suomela is he melds into the overall sort of additions and subtractions of the offseason. Right.
Yeah.
The Sharks, I think the story of the offseason, and this also goes into, as you were talking about with Kane, is that, yes, Kane was re-signed, but the Sharks also moved on from some guys and cleared cap space. And in prepping maybe to try to bring Tavares in, also looked to supplement other areas of the organization, particularly like, you know, Eric Fair came in for the back half of last season, became the fourth center, really solidified the fourth line in some ways. But, you know, he was a little expensive for what he was. And I look at the Suomela signing and some of the other stuff that the Sharks did as part of that process of like lowering the cost of the bottom six.
Yeah.
So that they could bolster the top six. Part of that was the re-signing of Kane. part of that is other stuff we're going to talk about in terms of extensions.
Yeah.
But, you know, we were in an interesting place where at one point the Sharks had like $18 million of cap space free.
Right.
Right. And with Tierney unsigned, Hurdle unsigned, and on and on.
Yeah.
But they had some decisions to make on Joel Ward and Fair, and miracle of miracles, a trade appeared. Can you talk about that?
Yeah. You're talking about Kyle Wood?
No.
You forgot about that one too, didn't you?
No, man? No, I know that one. There's one I'm more interested in talking about.
Let's talk about the one that actually.
Ding dong, the Wicked Witch is dead. Everybody, Badker is gone.
And not only is he gone, but this Sharks trade, this is a swindle here, because when you think of, like, you know, last season we were talking about with that contract, which wasn't even a terrible contract, you know, I mean, terrible considering his value to us, but compared to some of the deals that are out there, not the worst contract in the world. But, you know, we looked at that with his play and said, God, this is going to be we're going to be stuck here with this player, and hopefully he gets better. And, you know, yeah, moments,
no, he was never going to get better,
but yeah, right. But wasn't really going to amount to much of anything as far as our squad is concerned. We flip him. I'm still trying to figure out how we got the cap space and a pick.
Not just one pick, ultimately.
Yeah,
right. And a prospect, in the right? chain of transactions.
Crazy.
Because the Bunker move was one. Look, I slept through the entire Mike Hoffman era.
By the way, did you even remotely, of all the things that have happened in this offseason, right? This is the one that there's no way you saw coming. Right, no. There's no way anyone saw.
No, we hoped. Right, we all always hoped that.
Yeah, but we hoped we would maybe move him, but we thought
and
that
retain
that if
salary
we moved him,
or something.
We get something terrible.
Yes, yeah, and well, then of course, fortunately for everybody in the league, there's Ottawa.
Yeah, yeah, and let me tell you something. Let me tell you something about this trade, because, you know, part of what was going on here is, you know, Ottawa in their clusterfuck of an organization right now.
Yeah.
You know, Mike Hoffman's girlfriend was allegedly
harassing.
Yeah. Yeah. Carlson's girlfriend, right? I believe.
Wife. Yep.
And I just want to point something out to you all. If you haven't figured this out from the Kane scenario, Doug Wilson is sniffing around for disaster in the league and going, I hear you've got a harassment bullying problem on your team. I can take care of that for you if you just take this really shitty contract. Like, this is how he's getting what we're getting. Like, this is how we got Kane.
Well, you know what's interesting about this is, as I actually think Ottawa thinks Bodker fits in their lineup.
They may, but I tell you what, I got a bunch of friends who are Ottawa fans who know better. Who immediately know better.
Wait. I think that statement self-cancels itself. If they knew better, they wouldn't be Ottawa fans.
Well, sad trombone.
Listen, you can't choose where you're born. Not that Ottawa's a bad place. I mean, I'd rather be from there than Winnipeg. I'm not allowed to visit any of these places anymore. Now,
you know what? We can go visit a Canadian team when they win a cup.
So this trade is significant for a number of reasons, right? First of all, it opens up a roster spot. Second of all, the Sharks get stuff in return that's useful. And third, this, to your point earlier, Ben, this is one of the things that kind of magically clears cap space for a potential Tavares doesn't happen acquisition. Any other thoughts on that?
Yeah. I mean, the main thing is that Bodker turned into 4 draft picks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Crazy.
I mean, and bear in mind, okay, so it was Bodker. It was also Julius Bergman, who is a defenseman that kind of stagnated last year. He didn't make the progress the organization hoped he would make. And whatever. I mean, I hope that he has I hope that he finds his way with Ottawa and ends up in the NHL. I always liked what he brought to the table at the AHL level, but, you know, he was not going to make the NHL team. And if that's what it took to get a couple of picks in Hoffman out of Ottawa, whatever. I think what was actually funny about this whole thing is, I think if we had known at the end of the day that Tavares was not going to end up with the Sharks, which I didn't think he would, but, you know, we were hopeful. I feel like today we'd be happier if Hoffman had actually ended up here. In some sense, Not maybe not from the perspective of the locker room, but from the perspective of that guy. That's a guy that can score and is still relatively young. There are a lot of folks in the fan base who I think are happy that he didn't stick around here because of the stalking and cyberbullying or whatever. But bottom line, 4 draft picks for Michael Bakker.
Yeah.
That's four more draft picks than I thought we would ever get for Michael Bakker.
I take that every time. Now, the funny thing is that I was awake when the trade happened. And so for a minute, I was like, oh, okay, we got Mike Hoffman. Okay. Let me think about that. And then before I could think about it, Mike Hoffman was gone off to Florida. So that was like we kind of got a player in the offseason that maybe. And then he was instantly gone. And then I was excited because I realized what we were getting in return and what Doug was slowly starting to do.
Exactly right. Yeah.
Speaking of things that he was slowly starting to do, not too long after that, Paul Martin was bought out. Clearing more cap space. Now, I do want to say, Paul Martin last year, not a great year for him. Obviously, for many reasons, he tried to come back, and I appreciate all of his effort, and I appreciate first two seasons with us, a necessary piece and great, and we wish him the best. But this was absolutely something that had to happen, and the right move by Doug Wilson.
Well, and I'm sad Martin didn't make a comeback showing this season so that we couldn't flip him for like a fifth round.
I'm sure Doug tried everything in his power to move him.
Oh yeah. I mean he got what, 2/3 for Murray all those years ago?
So, 2 seconds.
2 seconds.
Oh. Yeah, that was 2 seconds for Murray.
Oh man. So I mean the back of my mind, I was like, okay, two good draft picks for Murray. We can turn this into something. And nope. And I guess that's the problem of him having sort of checked out of the league at the Penguins is you're a central team that gets lots of promotion. So everyone has watched you play. Everyone has sort of watched you fall. And it's like, hard to flip that.
I think this was the way it was going to go. I mean, it's not like Martin wasn't available during the season for a team that wanted a veteran presence for the playoff run. It is what it is, and it's the right decision because it prevents DeBoer from icing the unfortunate orange cone that Paul Martin had become.
Yeah.
Yep.
And having said that, Martin was obviously a key part of that team that made the run to the Stanley Cup final.
Yeah.
He just went off a cliff.
Yeah, but we knew that, right? I mean, let's be real. When we started this podcast and we talked about the Martin and the Ward situation, we noted that the Sharks were basically paying for those first two seasons and that the contract length was the necessity to get them signed here, which seems to be the norm for the Sharks, right? They usually have to do over term in order to do it. So it's not like this was necessarily a massive surprise, I think, for a lot of Sharks fans, because this was likely going to be the situation, not necessarily knowing that we would need to buy him out, but kind of figuring that the third and fourth year were that's not really what that contract was about.
Sure. I just really hope somebody was gonna take him off our hands for like a fifth, sixth rounder.
No, of course.
Like,
that's asking too much.
Yeah.
I know.
I mean, remember, in the last 2 years, the Sharks have given up two players onto waivers to other teams for nothing, right? So that was the ultimate most likely outcome with Paul Martin as well, is that somebody would claim him off waivers. And you don't get anything for that but the cap space anyway.
Right.
So I think, I'm just happy that he doesn't remain an option for DeBoer. Because I don't think DeBoer could help himself.
I agree. And to be clear, we've sort of had like the parade of clowns coming through the team over the last few years where we've just been happy to see people go. And I don't want Ward or Martin to think that it was like, oh, they showed up and were complete trash and then
No, they weren't. Absolutely not.
Yeah, that's the point, is we've had the brown note and we've had those people.
Yeah, right.
And here we're seeing the back of you know, two just great vets that made our team better for when they first came in.
Yeah.
And,
yeah,
you know, good. And
just aged out of the league. Right?
And, had, yeah. and, process. And had great, great personalities. Now, I want to move on. This next section is going to get a little messy. We're not going to talk about the draft right now. We're going to hold off on that before you say anything, Colin. There are a couple of other moves that actually technically happen later, but we already knew were going to occur in the chase for Tavares, and that was Ward was not going to be re-signed.
Yep.
Fair was not going to be re-signed.
Yep.
DeMello wasn't tendered an offer and was becoming an unrestricted free agent. And that's an interesting situation, which we'll get into after Tavares, guys. And Joe Thornton, the Sharks were basically everyone was pretty clear on the Joe Thornton front that he was probably going to come back. He wanted to come back. He was going to take, you know, whatever, I'm doing air quotes, discount was required to help the team pretty much get Tavares in the same way that it seemed like he did the same thing last season. As far as if he and Marlowe were both signed, his contract would have been, you know, worth less. So a whole bunch of moves here that basically give Doug Wilson money for July 1st, the first day of free agency. Now, we talked and joked a lot last season about Tavares and the Sharks doing things for Tavares and yada yada. But here's the thing. When Tavares' watch came around, guys, that looked real. And for a number of reasons. Yes. First of all, Doug Wilson, not only did he make the cap space available, not only was it painfully obvious that we were going to go after him, but a lot of the reporting that started to come out really gave some strong indications that the Sharks might have a shot. Now, those indications were lots of very public, I guess I would say, not even press releases, but just, you know, a lot of conversation coming from the Sharks org as far as all the players are on board to figure out how to make this happen. We're all on board. We all, you know, we're all going to work together, which kind of was a good indication that when it came to contracts and other stuff, that a lot of guys were basically, you know, potentially had word agreements with Doug to kind of ensure that whatever he needed cap-wise, he could get. Another thing that occurred here was incredibly, incredibly smart, and you know this was done intentionally. Press moves by the Sharks organization, one of which being Kane, like the day before free agency, doing a Players Tribune article about how much the Sharks have meant to him and why it's such a great place to play, and that was not so thinly veiled chase toward Tavares, and of course Joe Pavelski's grandmother tweeting Tavares. Now, when push came to shove, most people were reporting that he met with, I think, five teams in the end. Correct? It was the
Boston.
Islanders, Boston, Toronto, Sharks. Six teams, I think. Right? Dallas,
yeah.
Tampa Bay, and those started to get whittled down. Some of those didn't even really make a lot of sense, to be perfectly honest. And it was really looking for a while like it would be either the Islanders, probably not, Toronto or San Jose. Now, he went to Toronto. He's from Toronto. He lives in Toronto. And I'm not going to fault him for that. But what I do want to bring up is, as far as the Sharks are concerned, we did everything we can. And I really admire that, because the contract that we were offering him was crazy cakes. But that's what basically we needed to do, which is like the max of the max. But the weird thing about the Tavares situation is I liken it a little bit to the first LeBron move in the NBA, but almost on the opposite end of the spectrum, right? If you guys remember, or if you don't watch basketball, basically when LeBron left Cleveland, it was this really big public hoopla that he and his agent were very much driving. He did that really awkward, you know, televised announcement that he's taking his talents to Miami. And it just didn't sit well with pretty much anyone unless you were a Miami fan. Tavares' situation had notes of that, but not necessarily from Tavares, because he wasn't really saying a whole lot. But the interesting thing about this is, at the trade deadline, Gar Snow should have moved him. Period. Should have. He said, please don't move me. So they didn't. Then he took his sweet damn time to basically wait until the 11th hour to notify them that he wasn't going to re-sign with them. Now, what's weird about that is the reasoning that came out of that, and I can't recall whether it was from him directly or his agent or whoever, But it had to do with the fact that, you know, he didn't want to be playing between two arenas, which is what, you know, was inevitably going to happen. There was stability and he wanted to win now. Basically, all these things that even with the moves that the Islanders did in the offseason to try to lure him back, he should have known this by the last trade deadline. Like, so he screwed the Islanders. Like, completely, like, seriously.
Well, think about it here, right? Can I say something?
Hold on. The logic that he had for leaving, like, nothing changed over the summer based off of what was published.
Well, lots have changed after the trade deadline. Lots of things. In the sense that, as you say, the Islanders brought in Lou Lamoriello. Yes. They fired Garth Snow.
Right.
They had a great draft.
Yes.
Right.
But those are not win now things.
Right. You're right. But, like, and it's, by the way, 6 years too late.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah.
But I don't have any problem with John Tavares wasting an extra day of the New York Islanders' time as an organization.
right.
Because they wasted the first 7 years of his fucking career, or nine years or whatever it is.
Sure.
So let's be clear.
But for someone who consistently through the end of the season and through the offseason was talking about how important those fans were to him, the organization was to him. It was kind of the way it turned out was not the best.
I'm not in Tavares's head. None of us are, right? None of us have been in that position where you've got to make this you know, multi-million-dollar decision, and teams are throwing every, you know, bit of data at you as to why it would be better to come to this. And I actually don't doubt that it was a hard decision for Tavares to make.
Oh, of course.
You spend 9 years in a place you kind of don't want to uproot.
I agree. But he also doesn't live there. You know that, right?
Right. Yeah. No, that's fine. But, you know, you spend, you know, whether you live there or not,
right,
you live there during the year.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And it's the first organization that you know. I don't think it was malicious in any way. I don't mean to imply that.
Right.
It just kind of, you know, he very much, I think unintentionally, I kind of agree,
yes,
led them on.
Sure.
But he still led them on.
But why wouldn't you?
I'm sure from his agent's perspective, it's fucking great.
Right.
Like, absolutely. And I think in the end, and Ben, I'm pretty sure you share this thought, even though it looked like each passing minute, the Sharks' chances were getting higher and higher and higher.
I didn't feel that way. But
I did, and I think a lot of fans did. But we all secretly knew that it was Toronto. Like, we all knew it was going to be Toronto.
I knew it was Toronto from the beginning.
And so very much, this is the, I'm assuming it's his agent, basically playing the Sharks and everyone to get more money out of Toronto. Now he didn't get much more money.
No, that's what
that's the bit that I want to jump on.
Please.
Saying that, oh, he's trying to jerk people around to get more money when he took one of the lower offers apparently on the table.
Well, and the increased offer that they gave him after the Sharks raised their offer.
So that's what's really interesting, right?
Yeah,
what we've heard from the reporting is the Sharks offered $13 million.
Yeah.
Which Toronto was offering $11 million.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Colin.
They're like, I desperately wanted Tavares on the team. I was, you know, if you go back and read our chat log, I'm there with Alex being like, but it makes sense. It's perfect. It's everything we need. We're everything he needs. It's, you know,
so,
and I mean, nothing happens.
You're talking about a guy. Sorry, but just to touch on that real quick. You're talking about a guy who kind of, you know, has publicly said he doesn't really like the spotlight. So outside of the crazy salary, outside of the term, outside of the ability to potentially win now and, you know, still be a major part of the franchise, it's also an opportunity to do all that and still be relatively under the radar as opposed to Toronto, where that spotlight's bright. Sorry, Colin. Yeah.
So, what I was just going to finish with is, even with how perfect the franchise, you know, our team is for him and he would have been for us, not a $13 million. Like, $13 million is you telling a, like, your bottom six, hey guys, here's some ramen and beans for the part of your career.
So I'm glad
this guy's that good.
I'm glad you said that, because to some extent, I think $13 million even for a franchise altering player like Tavares, it would have hurt the Sharks' ability to put a competitive team around him. That's A. B, what's it funny about that is he got a whole extra $250,000 out of Toronto for all of that, right?
Yeah.
They went from 11 to 11 and a quarter, according to the reporting, got by guys like Bob McKenzie and Elliot Friedman, et cetera. Whatever. Like, had he come to the Sharks, it would have been literally franchise altering for us, the jumbo trade in the first place. But he was never coming to San Jose. It's very clear that he was just trying to get what he could out of Toronto, and that's where he wanted to go. And I do not blame him in the slightest. As much as we say that this would have been a great place to win now, we are teal-tinted, blinded if we think Toronto is not just as good, if not somewhat better in the mid and long term.
Well, and that was a team that was the team that he grew up loving.
That
you
too.
I mean, when we say it came down to it was sounding like Sharks in Toronto, the pulls to Toronto were extremely obvious. It's not like that was out. Like, the one that really would have been weird again would have been even with all the moves that the Islanders had made, which were the correct moves to make, just too late.
Agree.
Signing with the Islanders would have made, of all the teams that he was looking at, except for maybe Boston, just because they didn't even have the space to really make that work.
Neither did Tampa Bay, by the way.
Right.
They were still in there.
But I could get Tampa Bay. The Islanders to me were always kind of like it's too late. It's too late.
Right?
Too far gone. Like, good try. Now, as you've guessed, because we've said it multiple times, he didn't sign here. And boy, that was, again, Ben, to your point, even though some of us, we all, I think, kind of knew, some of us had more hope than others. Still a bit of a depressing moment. Now, there was something else that occurred actually right before. And I don't know whether or not this was because Doug had already figured out what was going on or not, but basically on June 30th, the day before, it got out that, Logan Couture had already pretty much inked your extension. They were waiting until free agency to...
Because they had to.
Yeah.
They had to wait until July 1st for him to be able to re-sign that contract anyway.
Yes, right. So, that was going on kind of at the same time. Now, immediately after the Tavares situation, I think for a lot of us fans, again, there's a bit of a fallout moment where it's like, okay, well, now we have all this cap space. What's going to go on? It was pretty clear that Thornton was going to come back. So Thornton has come back 1 year.
And he came back pretty fast too.
Yeah.
Right?
That was all teed up.
Yeah, totally.
He signed a 1 year, $5 million contract. And the next day, Tomas Hertl signs a 4 year, $22.5 million contract. Which, I mean, we know Joe Thornton just had, he still missed, most of last season with his second knee surgery, but I mean, it's good. It's good that he's coming back. I think the Sharks need him, and Hurdle's obviously good. The way he was playing, especially towards the end of the season, those are positives for sure. So even though we didn't get Tavares, and even though, yes, technically, it's, the roster hasn't necessarily changed all that much at this point in the summer. All these things, you have to look at Doug Wilson right now and go, you're pretty much doing everything right this offseason. Like, you couldn't land Tavares, but it's not because you didn't do everything in your power.
Yeah.
And that's encouraging.
There's an interesting stat you sort of nudged as you went by. And I know Ben was really big on this for the last 10% of the season, which is, Hertl was playing really good near the end of the season. And we also happen to have a bunch of other guys who, statistically, from what Ben has been telling us, are looking at the potential breakout season next season.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why don't you tell us about that, Ben?
Well, I want to come back to that right again in the context of Tavares' watch as well, right? Because I think, look, we were all disappointed that Tavares chose Toronto. Whether we expected that or not, it would have been literally franchise altering.
We literally would have replaced we would have done the transition on the fly in full.
Yeah. One generational center to another.
Yeah.
Literally. Core. Right. From Jumbo to Tavares. It would have been a thing that would have carried this franchise into another new playoff window.
Right.
Essentially. Right.
Yeah.
And let's put ourselves in the shoes of Tavares for just a moment, right? This is why I was always skeptical that he would choose the Sharks, is that the Sharks have kind of a young core. They do have a young core, and it's a promising young core of Timo Meier and Kevin LeBanc and Chris Tierney, honestly, plus then Hurdle and Couture, who are a little bit older.
Yep.
On the forward side. I'll say it again, like those three guys, Meier, LeBanc and Tierney, they project to have 50 to 60 points next year each. And that's very promising. But if you look at Toronto, they're younger across the board, not counting Patrick Marleau. Right.
Yep.
And also, look, you're talking about guys who are on the same trajectory, but with a higher upside of Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner and William Nylander.
Aren't they all young?
Yeah, too? You know,
and Andreas Johnsson. Like, if you're Tavares and you're being pitched on you're the future leader of this team, you have to choose Toronto.
Yeah, but I will say this. And I'm not, I don't mean to sound bitter because, you know, again, I'm really not I don't fault them at all. Like if I were in the position to choose the Sharks because I grew up a Sharks fan, I would take the opportunity to play for the Sharks. I totally get it. The one thing to note though, is that press is effing crazy.
And, but it's the fans too.
And the fans too. And so the interesting thing, Ben, I think, is going to be watching the next couple of seasons, because if I suspect that if Toronto does well, which is no reason to believe that they won't do well, I think a lot of that credit will be spread around. Very much will probably go to Matthews. I'm sure some will go to Tavares as well. A good amount will go to Tavares. However, I bet you that if for some reason it doesn't work out, right? And I don't mean Tavares.
Oh, it's going to get horrible. Right.
People will blame Tavares. Now, sure. Again, for a guy who... he had to make this call. He's taking on a lot of responsibility. It's not like he doesn't know this stuff, but it's just really interesting, you know, because there are players that they're players that really thrive in the spotlight. There are players that just really don't want to deal with it.
Yeah.
And then there are players who maybe thought they did and then didn't. Like I use Kane as an example, right? At least from what we've heard. So to put yourself in that position when that isn't really your personality, it's going to be interesting for him, you know. I wish success, but you know, that's a lot of pressure.
I don't disagree, but if you look just objectively at the rosters, Toronto appears to have, when you're talking about an 8-year contract, right, or 7-year contract, Toronto makes more sense.
Yeah,
I wish he was here. I really do, but you know, I don't think that diminishes the fact that actually the Sharks, because of some guys that they've picked over the last few years and some guys who have some free agent signings that they've made that have big upside, that the Sharks probably do have, you know, a really nice upside over the next few years too. It's just harder to see, right? Because the pedigree isn't the same.
Do you know what this whole Tavares watch unveiled to me, Ben? It's that, and I already knew this, but it's abundantly clear right now. It's that most of the press have no effing clue what the Sharks are and who they have on their roster.
By the way, one other thing I wanted to hit, and you really made an excellent point here, and it's something I've been thinking about a lot in thinking about how to attract players to San Jose. Hmm. We're at a deficit because we are not a traditional hockey market, right? There are not as many players growing up wishing, dreaming to play for the Sharks because so many of these players grew up in Canada.
Although Ovechkin, we were his favorite team.
Well, sure. Well, and actually, funnily enough, I think Merkley actually is a Sharks fan. Hmm. I think it was Merkley anyway, who was rooting. There's a tweet from a couple of years ago of one of the guys the Sharks have actually pulled as a young guy who I think it was Merkley, but it might've been somebody else who is a total Burns fan, and was 2 years ago rooting for the Sharks in the Stanley Cup final. But there just aren't as many of those guys. And there certainly aren't the guys who are, you know, generational players who were drafted 6, 7, 8 years ago who grew up Sharks fans compared to growing up Maple Leafs fans.
Yeah.
Senators fans, you know, whatever that they dream to play for those big Canadian teams. The deeper we can get into, you know, the years that the Sharks have been a winning franchise, right? Mm-hmm. The more hopefully that changes.
Yeah. No, I agree.
So anyway.
I agree. I want to talk about one more move before we move into the draft, guys. And that is, I mentioned earlier, Dylan DeMello. So Dylan DeMello wasn't tendered an offer, became an unrestricted free agent. Now, there are probably two reasons for this, I'm guessing. And I kind of suspected the latter of the two. The first is, you know, we're only playing him cap space, give him an opportunity somewhere else. But the other was really dodging arbitration, I think, in his case.
Yes, it was.
And given what he signed for, which is a 2-year, $1.8 million contract, that's most likely what it was. Wasn't so much that they didn't want him on the team. It's that's not what they wanted to spend. And I'm actually surprised. I don't know about you, Ben. I'm surprised that he signed for that.
Oh, it's tiny. I think that DeMello gambled that people were awake on the East Coast watching Sharks games and that he'd be able to get more. And it turns out, unfortunately for him, but fortunately for the Sharks, that he was wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. So he comes back. So those are most of our offseason acquisitions. We'll probably talk about one more a little bit later when Ben talks about some prospects. Draft, guys. So interesting thing pops up here, right? In the last couple of weeks, a few videos surfaced, the Sharks put out, they seeded, of Doug Wilson Jr. basically running that draft room leading into the draft, which is pretty interesting. And since the draft, he's got a bump. Burke, debatable whether or not his move was a bump or whether he's just kind of being
shuffled aside.
This draft, though, I mean, I didn't follow the prospects in this draft anywhere near as much as I have in years past because this wasn't really the strongest draft in the world. But what do you guys think overall of what the Sharks did? Silence, crickets.
No, I've got plenty of opinions. I just wanted to give Colin a chance because I usually talk too fast. Colin, your thoughts? Did we lose Colin?
Oh, he might have muted. Go, Ben. Your thoughts.
Rant. He is muted. Okay.
Rant.
He probably has. So no, I'm not going to rant. I guess I'm just going to say.
I didn't know I was muted. I kept talking. I'm like, why are they interrupting me?
Hey, Ben, now you know how it feels when you steal my transitions. Go ahead, Colin.
Yeah, go, Colin.
I'll be short and sweet. It felt like a surprisingly typical but like risk averse Sharks draft. There was no real, oh my God, we passed this guy to go for that. It was sort of like, yeah, okay, these choices all kind of make sense.
You mean trading back? You mean we didn't trade back in the same way that we?
Yeah, exactly.
Take the less obvious pick.
Yeah, so, and it seemed safe. It seemed atypical. So I was kind of.
I would agree with mixed. You when you talk about the third, fourth, and sixth round. Ryan Merkley was actually, in some sense, a huge risky swing because of the attitude issues that allegedly he's had at his level. And in fact, I'm stunned that the Sharks took the guy who is probably has top 11 talent when you look at the draft here, but probably bottom like seventh round maturity. I guess I would say.
Well, it's interesting because this is probably, I mean, and this isn't that long ago, but this is probably the most high potential, high risk draft pick since maybe what, Goldobin, right? Because Goldobin potentially had a high ceiling, but you looked at some of the underlying stats and you said, yeah, but he's not play. He doesn't play any. He literally does not play any defense, so he could be a superstar, or he could be a total bus, but probably not like a middle of the road type dude.
Have fun, Vancouver.
Yeah, well, I mean, and that's the thing. Like, I don't think Goldobin's issue was ever like,
no, it was an attitude.
Like the sort of character concerns that there apparently are for Merkley.
Right.
It was work ethic, and it was, as you say, defensive liability. Now, that's the thing. Merkley doesn't play defense at all, even though he plays in the defense position. But he's sort of, if you want to project, he's kind of looks more like a Erik Karlsson / Brent Burns style defensive player, which is, he's going to contribute to offense for both teams. Right. But he's 17 years old. He's got huge upside. Like, this is the sort of player in the first round that the Sharks should be going for.
Yeah, especially
huge
right now.
Upside. It, you know, where they pick, you don't get the safe guys that are also huge upside, low risk, right? So I was really happy to see, in some sense, that they went for Ryan Merkley, because if you hit on a guy like this, you've taken a guy who probably does have top 10 talent.
Yeah. Well, and you probably didn't. And by taking the risk, I mean, let's be real, Ben, you say this every year, and I completely agree with you. Draft picks are crapshoots.
It's a lottery pick.
Like, unless it's a generational player in a draft, you know, you're not guaranteed anything.
The Sharks don't pick where you get clear, but I'm going to be top players.
But I'm just saying, even if you're within that range, right? We see draft picks all the time that are, you know, this is going to be a hot prospect, and they don't become one. And you know, that's an obvious thing. But that's the thing with any prospect, again, with the exception of like McDavid, which I agree, Ben. Sharks never get the break. But even if we're talking like, you know, within the top 10 outside of the first three, in most drafts, like there's no guarantee those guys are going to pick. So why not take a big swing?
Contrast to last year, the Sharks picked 19th in the 2017 draft, and they picked a guy who most draft sort of analysts would say was picked an entire round too early.
Yeah.
Right. They picked Josh Norris, who actually, by the way, when we talk about the prospect game, looked like a NHL ready guy to some extent, but probably projects to be at best a third liner.
No, he's new Tavares. Shut up, Ben.
but my point is, like, the Sharks have overemphasized some particular aspects of character and being a center. and not things like speed and skating and scoring ability. And, you know, that's fine if you're really just trying to fill in behind generational players you already have, but it's not great if those guys have aged out of the league. So, you know, Merkley as a potential home run pick in the first round is a great shot for the Sharks, whether he works out or not, right? It's the 21st pick in the first round. Once you get past the top 10, it's a lottery ticket one way or the other. Now, you know, beyond that, they took some guys that I don't think were picked where anybody expected them to be. So Linus Karlsson in the third round may be a little bit of a reach where he was, except I will say that Karlsson is a guy who was tearing up the Swedish juniors, and just when he got a chance to play with adults before the draft, didn't blow anybody away. But I think in the third round, whatever, right? Like, if he's got a chance to make an impact, that's fine. They traded up to get him, so maybe they didn't need to.
Hold on a second. Let's be real here. If you want to believe the rumors right now, the Sharks just have a Karlsson fetish. Or that's one of the only two names that Doug Wilson knows. Right? Right? Because Erik Karlsson keeps popping up as a rumor for us as well. And we already have a Karlsson. Let's just add a third Karlsson.
Let's get more. Why not? All the Karlssons you can get.
You know what? I got to be honest with you. So far, all the Karlssons, not bad.
Weatherby in the fourth round seems to be been a bigger reach, but people who are better draft Knicks within the Sharks community think that the fact that Weatherby's going to go play for a really really astute college program next year means that maybe he has more upside than a lot of folks thought. And for Edmund and Leonard, who cares? They're sixth rounders. We'll see.
You're so nice.
I mean, that's the thing, right? Like,
yeah.
The Sharks have typically done great work in those rounds, picking guys who have, again, like, they score, but they've got skating concerns, or they score, but, you know, they're scoring at a who cares level, right? Like, they're playing in the BCHL. One step below a lot of junior. That's the thing. The Sharks have been taking over the years a lot of reaches like this. Spent a lot of time emphasizing, you know, guys who are going to go play in, you know, for U.S. college as opposed to play juniors, which is a little bit more prestigious, if you know what I mean. But on the same token, some of those guys have really developed in a ways that people didn't expect. You know, the poster child for that being Joe Pavelski, who went to play at Wisconsin and then has had the most aberrant career curve you can have as a forward.
Yeah, bizarro.
Right? So, in other words, who knows? We won't know for 2 or 3 years. Last year's sixth and seventh rounders look like they are home run shots now. Chmielewski and Cechkovic both had great junior seasons and then had a hell of a run for the Barracuda. So that's, I think, what we can hope for, but is not assured with those picks.
Yeah. Well, let's move on to the to the prospects, Ben, because you got to check some of those youngins out.
Yeah.
Scrimmage. What was your take?
So I, first of all, let me say that I really love the prospect scrimmage. I love that the Sharks,
it's fun.
It's so fun, and it's $5, and it was a bigger crowd than you get for any CUDA game that's not like a Christmas break CUDA game at the tank. They do lots of great promotion. Basically, I'm going to shill for the Sharks here for a second. It's $5. $5 a ticket. They sell beer for a buck, hot dogs for a buck and beer for $2. Just go. It's a fun time.
Yeah. This organization does this stuff right these days, by the way.
Absolutely. They bring in everybody. They didn't bring in Swellmela. So I was hoping to get a chance to see him since they brought him in from Finland.
You want to see him play goalie?
Yeah, that would have been interesting. So let me start by saying, like, when I looked at the rosters, I thought Team Ricci was stacked. And I expected Team Ricci to just destroy Team Marchment because they put Merkley, Gambrell, Balser, Chmielewski, Hogablafel, Middleton, Gregor, all on that team, Blitchfield as well. And, you know, comparingly, Gambrell got time at the NHL level at the end of last year. Balser's was basically the guy who carried the CUDA through the year. And then Chmielewski was largely the guy who carried them into the playoffs. So, and Middleton has just been a guy that I think, you know, funnily enough, for a free agent signing, the Sharks have looked at as a kind of a shocking potential seventh guy for the Sharks this year. With how he's developed over the last couple of years. And of course, Hlbovac just blew people away in junior last year, and the Sharks were able to sign him as a free agent. He's the guy I kind of am most excited to see play for the CUDA, and is I would say, potentially this year's LeBanc. He has that scoring potential to be a guy who just jumps shockingly to the NHL team, from my perspective. By contrast, Marchman's team got Vladislav Kotkov, who was an interesting tryout guy of the Sharks. After one day of camp, signed to an entry level contract.
And people were after him, by the way.
Yeah, no, it wasn't just the Sharks, by the way. Yeah. You're right. So they had Kotkov, Norris, who was last year's first rounder, Carlson, and beyond that, like, who gives a fuck was basically on this list. Cechkovic was on this team too. So I thought that Ricci would blow them away. I was mostly paying attention to Ricci's team. And so I had trouble tracking the guys on Team Marchment. I will be honest. Team Marchment won in regulation. Norris looked really good. Carlson had the first goal. This is Linus Carlson. The guy I was just talking about a minute ago, coming out of Sweden as the third rounder that I thought maybe got picked too high, but actually looked really good. Gregoire ended up getting an entry-level contract signed out of this game. And funnily enough, I wasn't impressed by what I saw of him, mainly because he was the guy who was victimized on one of Team Ricci's goals, but the Sharks obviously saw potential there. So out of this game, my biggest surprise was Maxim Letunov looked outstanding. So he was a guy we traded for there was that third rounder that we ended up deciding to move a couple years ago, whose name is escaping me, but everybody was high on, and he was garbage for Detroit after he moved. Letunov played another year in college. He's gigantic. He probably had 7 different scoring chances that he just got stoned by good goalie play in the game. So out of this game, I thought Letunov looked the best and is the guy, besides Hlbovac, that I'm most excited to see play for the CUDA and challenge for an NHL spot down the road.
I liked Hogafalafel was probably the best attempt you've ever had at saying his name. Hogafalafel made me hungry. Guys, we always do a 3 stars. What? Yeah, no. There's reason for 3 stars here. Colin, you sound like you have some. I have some. Do you want to go first? You want me to go first?
I'll go first, I guess.
Take it.
third star is my delightful daughter, who has been very quiet while.
And she was coughing up a storm over there. I thought I was gonna have to tell you to leave before I call child services.
No, she's got her drink.
You gotta take care of that.
she's been a champ. She's just sitting watching Daniel Tiger while I'm a bad parent. Second star, I guess, is gonna have to. I was gonna give my second star to Doug Wilson, but I guess I'll give it to Doug Jr. since Wilson seems to be wanting to get Doug Jr. all his stuff.
Oh, that's clever.
And my first star is gonna go to us for doing this wonderful summer podcast.
Oh, that's nice.
Well, except to you, it goes to Ben and I. You can be like Burke. You're yesterday's news.
Yeah, sorry. Really
more like Will, who probably shouldn't be in the organization at this point.
But he's still GM of the CUDA, isn't he? Wasn't that his thing?
You don't think it's becoming pretty clear that if he wanted to bump up there, that's not occurring?
Oh, he's blocked now, right? Because Daddy's boy is now obviously ascendant, but...
For our casual fans, we will clarify what we mean in the next podcast.
Yes, exactly. My third star, and I know you guys never thought I would give this gentleman a star, but I'm going to give him a star. My third star goes to Marc-Andre Fleury. Wow!
Oh, wow!
How did you get that stupid contract? Three years, $7 million. I would never pay a goaltender that.
I mean, he made that because he dragged that team to the freaking Stanley Cup final.
And I totally get it, but I would never pay a goaltender that.
No, that team and that fan base is in for a horrible, horrible surprise.
No, but every single fan base gets to learn this lesson at least once in 15 years.
Hey,
when a player is up for a contract, they're going to play really well. Then the next year after they get that nice contract and get to, be relaxed, they're not going to play so well. Vegas, you had a lot of contracts in question last season.
Yeah.
Enjoy this coming season.
My second star is going to go to Evander Kane, and I'll tell you why. Reading that Players Tribune, I already liked him, but that was just endearing.
Yeah.
He explained where his reputation kind of comes from. He explained the logic behind, stuff he did in the past that he was criticized for. And he really, if you haven't read it, go back and read it. You will realize how important this opportunity is to him.
Yeah.
And you will leave not only liking him, but fairly confident that this, whether you like the length or not,
yeah,
next year is going to be a really fun season, especially because we'll get to see maybe him and Thornton do the way he
talked about the fans
here
in San Jose made me feel bad that I had been opposed to his re-signing. That is how much it touched me as a Sharks fan.
Yeah,
it was,
and the timing of it, which is obviously planned, but still, it's great.
Everyone should go just pause the podcast, read the article. Yeah. And then come back and listen to the entire podcast again, because we've all been touched by, this thing that Kane's name was on. If he penned it himself, like those are all his words, then I am.
If it was
just a conversation where he just talked with some guy and that's what came out of it, I'm still like, this guy's awesome.
Yeah.
So it's a great read.
For those of you who haven't read the Players Tribune before, it's a great, when the U.S. men's national team got bounced out, Pulisic wrote something. It's from the players. There's a lot of great hockey stuff in there. I think Doug Waite wrote a great one years ago. That's a pretty cool mag to check out. And again, I think Kane really deserves that star. My first star goes to Doug Wilson because, again, Doug Wilson did literally everything right to try to get Tavares. He's done everything right as far as getting the dead weight off of the roster and giving opportunity to either people who are ready to step up or... he's still got a lot of space to tool around with, and he could still bring somebody in. In fact, we had rumored trades going on that didn't occur in the draft. And so, you have to look at the situation, and you have to believe that the Sharks will probably, I'm guessing, start the season pretty much close to their current roster, see what comes out of camp and see what the opportunity is. But I believe at some point next season, maybe not until the trade deadline, but at some point next season, another move is going to come, and it will probably be a fairly significant one, because it's clear that, you know, that is the kind of thing that Doug is after. And not a, it's not a slight to the players we have on the team now, as much as it's, he's, I think he's aware of the age of part of the roster. He's aware of the pieces that he has. He's aware of what the needs are. And again, you know, we've criticized him in the past. Sometimes we love him. Sometimes he's amazing. And sometimes we're like, what are you doing? But really, this offseason, of all off seasons, has, I think, you know, despite not landing Tavares, probably been one of his better ones.
Ben, I mean, in just not panicking.
Yeah.
And making a terrible signing. When Tavares didn't sign here, he did the right thing.
Yeah. And by the way, that sounds like who cares? No. Most GMs don't do that.
Wait, no, I mean,
he is a calm. He's not a panic guy. He's a calm GM.
There was a lot of, you know, in the day of Tavares watch ending and him jilting us for Toronto, you saw a lot of fans being like, well, what's plan B, Doug? And my perspective was, I hope to God there wasn't a plan B, because there wasn't a plan B worth doing, right?
Exactly.
Like any trade for, let's say, Jeff Skinner, or another big name is Panarin, who is having problems in Carolina, would have cost assets that we would be sad to lose in the long run. And so I'm actually happy that they were all in for Tavares, and when it didn't happen, plan B is more hopefully a future plan. Because I think you're right in the sense that with the cap space the Sharks have available, the Sharks have the ability to go into the season, figure out what piece they need, and target that at the trade deadline.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to be, barring another crazy injury season, like, this is going to be a competitive team.
Yeah, we're a second round team.
So he has an opportunity to sit around and watch for the next Hoffman disaster.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Or sniff out whoever's going to be an extra free agent who isn't going to sign next year, and make that acquisition and then do an extension or whatever he needs to do. But a lot of GMs can really fuck up in the offseason. And Doug not only hasn't, what did we get for Boddicker again, Ben? I mean, come
four
on.
That's draft picks.
That's a star in and of itself.
Well,
in and of itself.
And this, beautiful. Oh, go ahead, Colin.
This is my hope for next season. My hope is that this season, Nylander just gouges an extra pound of flesh out of Toronto. And then we're walking over being like, so how's Matthews, Marner, Kapanen, and Janssen doing? Here they need a home.
Oh, mine's a little bit more. So I don't have Tavares to cling on to this season as like a joke hopeful. So here's what I'm going to do. Hey, guys, how bad do you think Edmonton has to be before McDavid starts demanding the
He's ironclad. Ironclad. No, that's not happening. But Toronto with whatever, like 14 mil left and still like one biggish name to sign, like Nylander's going to take like 4 mil probably. So, you know, they got 10 mil to sign three guys who are all going to be requiring at least 6. Like, they are in money trouble.
Someone's going to take a discount because they're going to win an opportunity.
Well, they're going to flip Marlow. Like, they're going to try to throw him under the bus.
He's got a no move. He's not going anywhere.
He's not going anywhere. He's there.
Well,
and he is not going to move. The reason he got that was because specifically.
I mean, the thing is you're right, Colin, that with the RFAs coming open, they are desperately vulnerable to an offer sheet. The problem is that whatever team wants to offer sheet one of those guys, whether it's Marner or it's not going to happen for Nylander this year, I don't think. But next year, if it's Marner,
is
you have to have your own draft picks, and the Sharks typically get rid of those as they go along. So it's not going to be us.
Or they need to, you know, trade out and, you know, trade the signing rights. So, I mean, there's not like a clear walk up with 10 bucks, come away with a top three forward, but they're in a bad place. And as Alex likes to point out, maybe we're not taking Marner, but we're going to feast on whatever team has to gut themselves to
get. Hey, man, look, that's how, regardless of your feelings on Niemi, that's how we got Niemi, right?
Yeah.
You know, like that's that Doug Wilson seems to be pretty good at that. And we know he drives people nuts on the phone. All right, Ben, you got to give me 3 stars.
Yeah. So just one last comment on Toronto. Then
I get 3 stars. Right.
The bigger issue for Toronto is that their defense is not very good. So they're going to have to somehow address that as well as being cap strapped. Anyway,
we've got defenders.
If you believe Toronto fans who think they're going to get everyone, they'll get Carlson and 8 other players somehow.
All right. So my 3rd star is going to go to Chris Tierney's agent because he's going to get paid in arbitration because the Sharks have tried to lowball the poor fucker for like 3 years running, and he's clearly had it. So good on you, Chris Tierney's agent, and let's all hope that that number is somewhere south of $3 million per year, because I like Tierney. He projects to get 50 or 60 points next year. He does not drive possession, so he's going to be a little bit of a boat anchor if he's making more than $3 million. 2nd star, I'm going to give to my challenge here is we've all, you know, as you said, Alex, we don't know really who's been spearheading the decisions to target European free agents over the last few years, but that credit has been given to Doug Jr. As he's been promoted. So if that is true, I want to give the 2nd star to him because of the level of talent that the Sharks have been able to draw from Europe that make it easier for this team to keep its playoff window open. That might be Suomela. It certainly has, to some extent, been Donskoy. I think Melker is trade bait and needs to go at this point. But
look, we've obviously, whoever it is, has helped establish a reputation for us there.
Yeah, and it's essentially a pipeline, right? A free pipeline of guys who may or may not be capable of jumping to the next level, like Donskoy and Sorensen seem to be able to. I mean, who knows? Proplin might make it this year. Suomela might be the guy who makes the 4th line center over Gambrell, though I think Gambrell's going to be given every opportunity there to fail. Philip Sandberg might make it up. Vladislav Klostov is 18 years old.
Yeah.
And Kokhov, the guy we just pulled from Colorado. I mean,
well, yeah, that's the thing I wanted to point out is these are not just random people that are getting plucked. These are good players in their leagues,
and top of their leagues,
are looking at them and they're coming to the Sharks consistently
and not Detroit like they used to.
Yeah,
right. So that's that, you know, as much as drafting is important to, you know, keep this team's window open, that's been free, you know, with when you think about Donskoy, essentially free top 6 talent, you know, you didn't have to spend a draft pick on. And then first, I have to agree with you, Alex. I have to give Doug Sr. Credit for going all in to attempt to get Tavares. It didn't work, but that's through no fault of, I think, this organization. They did everything they could. They cleared the cap space. They moved Michael Bodker for 4 draft picks. Are you fucking kidding me? A guy who wasn't worth 1 draft pick and should have cost the Sharks $2 million per year to move on from.
And they did it. And they did it in a 2-team flip.
Right. Because Ottawa didn't want to trade within their division. And so what did Doug do? It's fine, man. I'll take off it. Oh, I'm sorry. Fleece I traded them. Him within your division.
Fleeced them.
Totally. Yeah. Absolutely. And for that alone, for reasonably locking up Couture and Hurdle and hopefully getting Tierney re-signed to something reasonable. And, you know, running an organization that has really restocked its talent without having top level picks and, you know, targets a guy like Evander Kane to fill a gap that the Sharks can't fill through having top 5 picks. You know, this team should have really gone off a cliff 2 years ago, to be perfectly honest. And it looked like it was going there when he signed, Brown and,
well,
et cetera.
We've gone, you know, because it started with Torres, right? The whole we need modern thuggery sort of kicked off with us bringing Torres back and that almost turning into something good. And then we had this, you know, march of assholes. And the group and the management team has shown that they've learned. They've shown, oh, hey, for whatever benefit this, you know, bottom line thug gets us, it puts our penalty kill in the spotlight. And unless we've got an outstanding penalty kill, this isn't worth it. And then we end up with Fair last season. And I think he did the role well. He added some points here and there, and he wasn't complete tire fire. So this group of managers has learned, and they've learned to not make the same mistake more than twice.
Yeah. Last thing I want to point out before we do the plugs, the salary cap, obviously that's the thing that everyone pays attention to. There is another thing that is worth paying attention to. And that is the number of standard player contracts that a team has. A team is allowed a maximum of 50 SBCs. Yep. 18 and 19 year old players that are down in the juniors or, you know, haven't played more than 11 NHL games in a season. Don't count.
Now,
the only reason that is noteworthy is the Sharks are currently sitting at 47. Not a big deal by any means because, you know, the Sharks are still in a good position with where they are. But, you know, every now and then when trade rumors pop up, you'll see people mentioning, like, you know, five-player, you know, multiplayer trades or, you know, something crazy. And you just got to pay attention to that number as well because you can't exceed it, right? So that'll kill half your rumors there sometimes. Not necessarily for the Sharks because we're never rumored to be getting 1,000 players like Toronto is. But, you know, just another thing to pay attention to, especially in the offseason. That concludes this special summer podcast. Bit of a long one for you guys. Hope you enjoyed it. You can subscribe to us on iTunes. You can subscribe to us on Android platforms. You can check us out on the web at circlingthecup.com. You can check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/circlingthecup. And you can tweet at us, mostly Ben, at circlingthecup on Twitter. That concludes our podcast. Seriously, write us. We really do like it when you write us. If you pose a question during a podcast when you're listening, or if you throw it on Twitter or Facebook, we do read them. We do try to respond immediately, and we will talk about it on the podcast if it's worthy. Our next podcast is the 100th podcast, and I'm going to tell you right now, you can take the summer off because barring the Sharks making a mind-blowing acquisition, we are probably going to continue taking the summer off until training camp time when we will celebrate being old. Other than that, we hope you guys are having a great summer. You're enjoying the heat wave, unless you're somewhere where it's cold, in which case I don't know where you are because it's not cold anywhere.
Global warming, everybody.
Sweden. Sweden's great right now. Colin's enjoying the Swedish bikini team. Now his wife's really upset with me. And that concludes our podcast, guys. Say bye-bye.
Come on, Colin.
Come on. Yeah, come on.
I think he's muted again.
What? I'm just
I'm bye, everybody.
How little Alex knows my wife.
First train wreck to you.
Yes.
Goodbye.
Later.
Bye-bye.